My name is Dan Robb, like I said, and I've been in youth ministry for about 12 years, California, here in Texas, and I've been volunteering or serving in youth ministry for almost 18. It's really crazy. Where's the time gone? I don't know. I'm married. This is going to be my 10th year being married, and it's great. Highly recommend it. We have two wonderful dogs that don't listen to me at all. Well, one does, but the other one doesn't. And so they're great, but no kids on the horizon yet. I think we're just having too much fun. And I'm enjoying life, enjoying ministry, and where God's called me. And so the title of this is Free Grace, Issues in Ministry. And I'm going to show a video in just a few minutes, but we do this thing at Hill Country. In fact, in the Austin area, there's over 20. Brian, would you say, how many would you, like?
About 26.
26 association. Yeah. But almost 30. What's that? Oh, yeah. So there's about almost 30 Hill Country Bible churches, some going on different names. And it's really the idea is just to plant churches. That's kind of the idea all around in the Austin area. So as far as Dripping Springs to up there in Georgetown and Sun City. And one of the ideas that they had for in doing youth ministry is this summer Bible club thing. And it's the easiest way to explain it would be a traveling VBS, but just with high school and junior high students. So we'll take, usually it's about 5 to 7 on a team. They all work together. Obviously, the gospel is this free grace, a presentation of that. But we do a boot camp, which just kind of, you know, explains everything, explains what they're going to be teaching. They go through the 4-day curriculum that we, you know, have made up. And then you'll have students that during that Bible club week will do, some will do the skit, some will be sitting with the kids during the skit, some will lead games, some will be the one doing the gospel, some will be sharing the story. And it's a really cool thing because I believe, and it is a Hill Country philosophy, that your youth are your best asset really in your church. And so we're going to talk a little bit later, though, how you can best help them with some of the things that youth today are struggling with. But they are really your key, your lifeblood to your church, especially your church in the next generation. So we're going to show this video about the Bible clubs. If you have any questions about that, I'll be glad to answer those later. If you want information like, you know, what do you guys use, what do you guys do, I would be happy to give you my email address, or you can give me yours. I can email you and let you know that. But back at our Bible club, I thought when I first got there, this is so hokey. High schoolers aren't going to want to do this. You know, no way in the world. They really get into it, though. And watch.
It's a way to touch kids with the life-changing reality of Jesus Christ.
It's a chance to let loose, chance to just be yourself out there.
You have your stories, you have games, skits.
Love on kids and teach them about Jesus and his awesomeness.
But it changes my life when I, you know, get to be a part of changing these kids' lives.
Look on a kid's face when the gospel finally clicks for them.
I love taking time out of my summer and spending time with these awesome kiddos and just sharing the love of God with them.
Well, it's really just about getting to love on these kids who maybe don't get love at their own home.
I'm just trying to find where my place is. I'm looking for my own oasis, so close I can taste this, the fear that love alone erases, so I'm back to the basics, I figure it's time I face this, time to take my own advice, love alone is worth the fight, love alone is worth the fight. Thought I'd come to this, but it seems like I'm finally feeling numb to this. The funny thing about the name is, you forget what the reason you were playing the game is. And it's all an illusion, a 21st century institution. And so I'm headed down the open road unknown. And we find what we're made of.
Thank you.
looking for the rhyme and reason. Are you born? Why are you leaving? What you fearing? What you believing? Why you living and breathing? Why you fighting it and getting it even? Let's go headed down the open road.
Bible Club a little bit, kind of gives you a little bit of an idea. So it's really awesome just to see the kids just minister to other kids and lead them to the Lord. Well, not lead them to the Lord, but I guess they've already believed. So it's just kind of just praying with them and making sure that they have a Bible afterwards. So, but one of the things that's, because our youth groups can be, you know, just like the most greatest part of our churches, sometimes we need to just be able to make sure that we can minister to what they're going through. And so my wife, she has a small group there of girls, and they did a survey to kind of see what the kids were really struggling with. Well, I was used to hearing kids, you know, like drinking, drugs, you know, those are some of the issues that were back there in California that kids struggled with. But we didn't get any of those issues. What we got was not pleasing parents was a high one. Let's see, it was grades, it was self-loathing, it was feelings of, like, unworthiness. And as I was looking through all that, I thought, wow, you know, what am I teaching, you know, why are they thinking these things? And we teach free grace, and, you know, I just kept thinking, why, what's the root of all of this? I think, personally, it's just the stress that students are under today, because now it's about, you got to get into a good college. If you don't get the grade, then maybe, you know, there's immense pressure. You know, both parents are working to get to do jobs, you know, and they're barely making it. And now college tuition's going up, and now the students are facing this stress, this pressure that's different. And it's really, you know, why do students go out and party, or why do students, you know, do some of the things they do? Why do they cut themselves? You know, a lot of it can be found in this root of stress, that whether they're seeing their parents break up, they're seeing all of this and they're going, ugh, what am I going to do? So two passages that really meant a lot to me that apply to what we're talking about here is 1 John chapter 1, verse 9. It says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I like what Zane said in his commentary, you know, confess is agree with God. And that's really just going, hey, you're right. I'm wrong. I'm agreeing with you that, hey, let's just move on here. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8 is another one that just really applies to what we're talking about here with student ministry. Philippians 4:8 says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. I think it's interesting he uses the word meditate there. Really, ultimately, how can we help these students? And there's a couple of principles that we can do that you can have in your church. And really, I want to make this clear, because sometimes, you know, you might not be directly involved in youth ministry, but you have students in your church. And so you are in youth ministry, even if you have students in your church, because they're gonna take your lead. And so, number one, just be positive. These students face stress all day, as I just said there. There was a parent that came up to me one time, and they were casually saying how, he goes, my daughter brought home a B+. I told her, okay, that's good. But you know, A's, that's what we need. We need to get A's. And I'm like, oh no, why are you saying this? You know, that knowing the daughter, I knew that, you know, this is already something she was struggling with. And so the parent didn't really, I think it was just an inadvertent, you know, just thinking, hey, you got to get that scholarship. You have to get these grants, you know, you have to get whatever, because we need to pay for you to have a successful career, a successful college. So there's just this whole idea. And so the Today Show did a thing about a year ago on the drug Adderall. And it's a drug that's used for people that have narcolepsy, people that have ADHD. But students now are taking it in order to focus and study more to get better grades in SAT, the ACT. Because again, it's this pressure of, I have to get into college. And it's not something that's going away either. It's there to stay. In fact, it's just getting more intense. So be positive. How do you be positive? Really just encourage students. I mean, really encourage students. You know, there's the whole famous adage of don't give them a backhanded compliment. You know, it's hey, you were really terrible yesterday, but today you were great. You know, it's like, oh, well, thanks. All right, I guess. You know, thanks for nothing, I guess. So it's just kind of making sure, being intentional, being encouraging. Because, you know, when people come into church, you know, the thing that everybody, especially new people, it can be kind of intimidating. It's a new setting. It's a new church. We don't know these people. And students the same way. You know, when they go into, they call it the big church. You know, oh, it's not youth group, it's big church. We go in there and it's like, and adults, I know, I can understand, because I love Pastor Arch, but I mean, he was a germaphobe there. I'm sure he'll hear this. He'll get back to him someday, and he was always like, hey, keep those kids with the sticky fingers away from me, you know, and I know he was joking, but you know, sometimes the teenagers can be that intimidating to adults as well. And it's one of those things where we just have to go, hey, you know what? It's okay. God loves us. We can step out of our comfort zone and encourage students. And really it's just something that if we don't do it ourselves, then I know they're not going to do it, you know. It all starts with one person, is what I'm saying. Be ready for teachable moments, and really that's just keeping your eyes open. Just keeping your eyes open to things you might see. How can I be an encouragement? Maybe you might say to a student, hey, how are you doing today? I'm doing good. The typical answer is I'm doing good. So I always like to say, oh, doing good, great. Oh, well, what does that mean? And then that makes them think about, you know, their answer, because I don't know about you, but I love to go autopilot sometimes when I'm in church and just, oh, hey, how are you? Or I'm not ready for something, and they'll say, hi, and I'll say, I'm doing great. And they're like, I wasn't asking that question. That wasn't the question. But I like to do the autopilot. A lot of people, especially with jobs and everything. Well, we have to actually step out of that, though, and just be ready for teachable moments, because they're happening all the time. And that's really the thing. If we're really aware of our surroundings and what's going on, then we can go, hey, you know, this student said he had a big test this week. I'm going to pray for him, and I'm going to let him know. And you instantly built a connection, and that's such a cool thing. You got to educate parents, and that's a little bit of what we're starting to do at Hill Country Bible. You know, we're doing a parenting teens course, and you may not agree with everything somebody says, like Doug Fields, but he is kind of the youth ministry guru, if you will. He's one of the most famous ones, and he has his own website, Homeward and .com, and he has some material there and some videos, and so it's just really about you going through it, watching it, and filtering that for yourself, whether it's Doug Fields or whether it's anything from Youth Specialties. But, you know, just looking at that and seeing what works for you and then tailoring it But you got to educate parents because they love their kids, but sometimes it's the things they say, it puts this undue pressure on students. Often I'll send an email, and sometimes instead of just sending an email like what's happening, I'll just tell them, like, just give them an encouraging word to say, hey, here's something to think about. You know, look for those opportunities when your son or daughter comes in the door to talk to them and not bring your work into your life. And I had parents say that, you know, they were like, I was taken out of my son, you know, what happened at work, and, you know, I had to catch myself, you know, while I was doing it. And it's so easy to do. I know I do it, you know, in youth ministry. It's like, that's my job, but it's easy to take what's happening out in our world into that environment. So just be aware of that. Secondly, build up confidence in your students. And this is what Hill Country as a whole has done, which is with the Backyard Bible Clubs. But also now, with our church, we have done away with Sunday school. And that may be something you want to do, may not be something you want to do. We did that because we want them to be serving in our church. And so they'll usher along with the adults. They will work in children's ministry. We have some possibly in guest services. I have some helping me in junior high. And it's just another thing of teaching those students, rubbing shoulders with your adults, because this will help them own the church. And in owning the church, you know, when they go off to college, they're going to get those times where their professor is going to say, there is no God, there is this. And it's going to really hurt students' faith. I remember one story when I was in college, and there was a guy that he was faithful to be there. He was in, he was a worship leader at, it was our FCA, and it was one of the bigger ones on the campus. And, you know, I saw him everywhere at every student Christian, you know, out, everything. He was always there. The next semester, never there. Talked to some people. It was like, no, he walked away. I was like, this is so weird. You know, it was such a sad story because he had some a philosophy professor who was, had it in him that he was going to just hurt this guy, hurt Christian's faith. You know, he just had an axe to grind, apparently. So this is where doing the programs, serving, all of that really helps out. Another thing that we've done is do a youth academy. And this is something, a brainchild of a guy that's helping me out in youth ministry. He wants students to be ready for those questions that they're going to get. And so since we took away Sunday school, we went away with that. We now offer, after church, a youth academy that students can go to. And it's specifically apologetics geared towards issues and questions that they might have. Is homosexuality okay? You know, that's something that students are facing. You know, what do you think about six-day creationism? You know, is that a viable option? Now, those are questions that we're dealing with. So it's very good. Students need to have that. And, you know, on our Wednesday program, our midweek program, I mean, that's not the setting because students are bringing friends. We want to make that fun. We want to make them also give them things that are going to be applicable for their lives and from a free grace doctrine. But, you know, talking about, you know, the six-day creationism and all of that, some students, that may not be where they're at. So the students that, you know, we try to encourage them to go to this youth academy. So that's how you can build up. Pass on your church's legacy. And that's one of the things that we had a Thursday morning Bible study, and we ran its course, and we're going to start it back up this summer. But we did a 12-week thing. The material we used was called Operation Timothy. I'm not sure. You could probably find it on Amazon. But we used that, and we had older men in the church cook breakfast for the students, and then we'd take them to school. I'll just tell you, food. If you want a discipleship group that's going to work, just make food. Just bring food. And this is, I had students every week that were like, hey, are we going to eat this week? And they were ready for it. And so just have food. They're going to be there. And we worked towards where the students got comfortable with seeing the older guys there every week, that I finally had the older guys share their testimonies with the students. And that was a really positive thing because the students got to know them. And then the weeks after, the students were saying, hey, what about this guy or that guy? You know, and so it's starting to make me see that, hey, maybe we need to do more of this where we interact. And that, I think that's really a whole church thing that you see in the Bible there. And First Timothy, passing on older teaching younger. You got to develop them. Pastor Arch did this thing at Coast Bible Church when I was there as a leadership team, where he took people that were just there in the church, and basically he taught them how to preach, taught them, you know, gave them Bible doctrine, and really was preparing them to be the next generation. These are younger men that he was doing this with. And one of the things that I like to do is prepare my good students to teach on a Wednesday night. Because, number one, I think sometimes when kids come in and they see another student there sharing their faith or really preaching, they're going to go, "Ooh, what does this person have to say?" And that means for me, that's another mouthpiece that I've added to the whole thing there. So it's not just Dan Robb up there saying this. It's, you know, this student is now speaking, and I've been helping him and teaching him. So it provides a good opportunity. So I just encourage you, hey, have your youth leader, or maybe you, develop your people, develop your students. We talked about self-loathing, unworthiness, some of these things that students really feel because of the pressure that they have in their lives, or seeing that maybe they feel like they're a disappointment to their parents. It really is a big self-image issue, and not understanding how God views them. And, you know, God loves them, and God wants to use them, and they need to know that they're made in His image. But that's something that really you're going to have to work on, possibly in small groups, if you do small groups. We do small groups. Our Wednesday program is like worship, teaching time, and small groups. Some churches do it small group, like discipleship outside. That's fine. We try to do everything that Wednesday night because we have them there, and because the academics in schools is, in my opinion, it's a lot. It's more than I didn't do homework. Okay, I didn't do homework when I was in high school. But for these students, it's a lot of academic workload. So we do the small group there, and the students talk about what we went through in the message. So that way, if they weren't paying attention when I was talking, they're going to get it over here, and they're going to understand that. So, and it also helps them build community. And that's where they can encourage one another. But self-image is just a huge, huge deal. It's really how they view themselves. It's going to reflect on whether or not they're going to be taking that next step in their walk with God. It's going to impact, you know, if they're going to be confident to share their faith. And that's where we as a church, you really need to come alongside them and help them out, encourage them. You know, because they may be getting from their parents, you know, "Well, Johnny, you know, you did this." And so it can be kind of like, I'm a constant disappointment. You know, I'm not going to live up to what my dad wants me, the standard that I can do. And so just all these things creates this internal, just like a volcano that just, and sometimes as youth leaders, we're on the outside not really knowing what's going on. And we see them, well, they haven't been back. Why isn't Billy or Johnny back anymore in youth group? It's because there's some issues that are going on. And oftentimes we see it in just like a tree. You know, we see, you know, maybe it's the drinking, it's the alcohol, or it's, you know, the cutting, or it's whatever. It's really the root of the issue there is really how they're viewing themselves from based on how their parents, their relationship, and all of that. And that's why, as we said in the first point, it's so important to educate parents and help them out. So, and you know what? The thing about it is, you all, you know so much already. You know, you do. And you have great life experiences, and you know things, and you know your people. And it's really up to you to come alongside them and help them out. You know, and, you know, never feel like, you know, I could never do this, or I could never say anything to them, because you could, and you can. And God's blessed you with great experiences and awesome things that He's done in your life, and that's where you can come alongside the parents of your church and help them out. But lastly, be available. Be available. Be aware of opportunities. Often we're more excited about getting to our chair, our seat, than we are about, you know, shaking someone's hand. Don't want a new person to steal our seat, and I totally understand. I know sometimes, you know, working, you know, 50, 60 hours a week, and you get to church, and it's like, it was a struggle maybe just to get to church. But just try to remind yourself, be available to people. you know, be not just emotionally not just physically available, but emotionally available. You know, it's easy to tune out. It's easy just to be a body there, but it's really up to you. Create the environment. You know, you create the environment with just really your expectations. You know, I mean, if you're ready to have a good day, then, you know, doesn't matter what happens, you know, you're going to be, that's your approach, and it's going to be, you're going to be able to help that student that you see that's sitting by themselves, and you're going to go, hey, little Billy's over there, I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to put my hand around him and say, hey, what's going on? What's happening? I had a lock-in last Friday, and I was sitting there, and I was sitting, and I was like trying not to sleep, and I had a girl sitting across from me, and I just said, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was like, wait a minute, I should ask her what's going on in her life. This is the opportunity. And so I thought, hey, what's going on? I've come to find out, you know, she hadn't been sleeping. And she was stressed out because mom and dad were getting counseling, you know. And then it was, you know, I'm worried. She's a junior, you know. She's like, I got to get into a good college, you know. And I'm like, that's so much pressure for being a junior in high school, you know. Plus, not to mention the high school pressure of, what does everybody think of me? And that's, again, that's something that, you know, for me, what I did was I course corrected with the way I taught on Wednesday nights. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to be making my applications more along the lines of the things that they're going through. So I'm still going to teach, you know, through James. I'm still going to teach Bible expositionally, but I'm also going to give them application that's going to be good for what they're struggling with. And not forcing the application, but allowing the Bible to teach and to do that. And I think that's really, you got to allow the Bible to say what it's going to say. But again, know what your students are. I think any anonymous survey you can do with what are the issues that they're going through is really key. Because those students, they are very transparent when it's anonymous. They are very, they'll tell you what's really happening inside. If you ask them in small group, it will be like, no, I'm doing great. Yeah. Pray for my friend who is struggling, you know, or I got a big workload at school. And so anytime you can do anything anonymously, I would do it. That way students feel safe. And because students don't want to look like they're inferior. They don't want to feel like people to think that they're weak. You know, they really want to present the best them in front of everyone else. And be available. Just make the ordinary extraordinary. And there's a book some years ago, The Fred Factor. And it is not a Christian book. It's a self-help book. I do recommend it just because Fred was a postman who took his job delivering mail, a very ordinary, mundane thing, very seriously. And he went out of his way to make sure that this guy got his mail. And I thought as I was reading the book, I can't even get my mail to my mailbox. You know, I have to get it from my neighbor. So, I mean, this is pretty amazing. And the same principles apply for church and youth ministry. And that is, you know, it's up to us to take something very ordinary, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, and make it extraordinary. And how do we do that? Just by smiling. You know, how do you, you know, just by being present, you know, and just kind of, you know, sometimes, you know, kids, fashion, trends, things are always going to change. And even though they always change, they still want someone to ask them how they're doing. They want somebody to ask them, you know, what are you listening to now? Oh, okay. You know, I haven't heard of them. What do they sound like? You know, and you're like, I don't want to listen to that again. But that's okay. You know, you just have to be aware, listen and watch. They're going to tell you a lot by their body language. They're going to tell you a lot just by when they isolate themselves, because a lot of the shy ones will do that. They'll tend to want to, if they don't feel like they fit in or they feel insecure, they're going to tell you right away because they're sitting over there by themselves. And that's our cue to go, as a leader, to go, hey, I'll just go over there and be a friend, you know. And fourthly, I'm sorry, help them understand God's grace. And the biggest critic often of us is us. It is. And students, the self-image, all of that, they're already they feel sometimes that they don't measure up to the other students in their class, possibly. And so it's picking themselves apart, where they really need to have grace on themselves, you know, because God doesn't see them that way. God loves them. They really, I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. I always knew that, but it takes a while to kind of really understand, let that click and go, oh yeah, God just loves me the way I am. I don't have to be somebody else. I don't have to, you know, do this. And sometimes it takes you 30 years to figure that out. Let's see. What I love to do is just make out a preaching calendar every August and set out what I'm going to do and plot out, the things I'm going to talk about. Every year is always a dating series, because whether you agree or don't agree, or you like courtship, or whatever your view is on dating, whatever, or relationships, I should say, feel free to do in whatever that is. Because students, that is one of those things, even though I go, I just taught on that. That's what I think in my mind. They need to hear it again. And they need to hear it the next year. And so I have the dating series. I have a salvation series that I do. Even though I know that they know, I want them to make sure that they know. I want to hammer that home to them, that salvation is through Jesus Christ for eternal life. It's free. They don't, yeah. And now I'm getting to the point where I feel that I'm going to have to start doing dating relationships even more, possibly twice a year, one in the fall, one in the spring, just because it's that much of an issue. And sometimes, again, if their image, self-image of themselves, you know, is just, oh, I'm not worthy, I'm not this, well, it's going to take that guy or that gal that's going to come into their life and speak, you know, that love, if you will, in their lives that they think is love, rather. And, you know, they're going to make some bad decisions, you know. And that's really, again, in youth ministry, that's where our job as youth leaders or people in the church really is to walk alongside them, you know, and just to say, hey, you know, I mean, you could point the finger, you could say, why'd you do this? And that's not really going to help you win that kid. That's not going to help the long run. Really just walking through life with them is going to help them tremendously. And you're going to build up their confidence in themselves, so that they'll be able to move past those issues, that their hang-ups, if you will. Just to kind of give you some perspective, sometimes we tend to think that the words that we say might not have a big meaning or impact to kids. Recently on Instagram, I saw a former student of mine posted she was Virginia's first-year student teacher of the year. Not student teachers, first-year teachers of the year. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, thank you. And she said, I was like, wow, that's so amazing. I responded, commented. I said, hey, congratulations. I'm so proud of you. That's such an awesome thing. And she said, yeah, you inspired me. And I was like, wow, what are you really talking about here? And she said, you preached this message back here. That was like her freshman year, you know, in high school. She said, you said I could do anything. And I was like, I said that. I can't believe I said that. I was like, all right. So she took that one thing and that inspired her. And you never know what your words and action, because what do they say about youth ministry? Like, you don't know what's really happening until they're done and it's been years now and you come back and you might have that honor of hearing from that student like, oh, you meant a lot to me. You said this and you did this. And the whole time I'm thinking, I was so stressed and busy during that time. I didn't think I had the time. But when you carve out the time, you make the time, you do that, you'll see that you'll have, God will use you in their lives. And sometimes the things that you don't think really mean anything, or you think, oh, I'm just saying this, means a lot to them. So let's go ahead and close in prayer, and then I'll have some questions here. Father, thank you so much for your love for us, and I pray that you help us as people in the church to just be able to put our arms around students that are going through a lot of struggles and with stress and parents divorcing and just all kinds of things. And I just pray that you would use us to show them that God, your grace, and I ask you for your help and your blessing in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, I'm going to open up the questions. Yeah.
You said you offer a parenting teens course. Like, what does that look like as far as mm-hmm. like,
Okay. we talked about, the question is, we talked about a parenting teens course and what is that? What is that like? What would it look like? Okay. I'll answer that first and then I'll come back to the next one. That can be, it is whatever you want it to make it to be. And that is a simple answer, but I've done it at another church where I had somebody else do it for me during the youth group time. And you can find different curriculums out there from youth specialties to group. A life group, I think, is the name of it, or live group curriculum. A lot of these places, they might be lordship, they might have a theological bent. So again, you just have to kind of weed your way through those things. But I look at them and I always like to go short bursts, you know, so like a 4-week study on this. This one I believe is called Ten Commandments for a Parent or something like that. So you go through all these commandments, you have a video and you go through that and you have discussion, and it's really, I don't want to say it's a, for lack of a better word, it's like a support group, if you will. Because sometimes parents, you know, they have kids right off the bat and kids don't come with, instructions. You know, it's amazing. So there's no like how to guide or whatever that's going to be the best. So, you know, parents are really trying and I think they want to help them out. It's just they may not know. And your next part of that was, what do you do when the best parents come? And then, you know, the parents that you really were thinking about when you made the announcement, hey, you need to be here. You know, I know that I've said that. You know, they're the ones, you know, how do you get them there? I think there's a couple of different options you can do. But let me just say, first of all, the best parents, they may be best to us, but we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. So they may, you know, there may be issues there, that we don't know about. So, but as far as the other parents go, I would say, I always like to do the drop by and visit and just knock on a door and just say, hey, how's it going? I'm your youth pastor or I'm your youth leader. Not just to be, just to say, hey, I'm just here to help. I think you really just, you know, maybe you don't feel like you don't need any help, but I'm just here to help. I'm here to come alongside you. And just, I think just communicating that right there, I mean, and say, hey, we have this class, you know, is that a convenient time for you? It, you know, would another time be better for you? And, you know, it could be good to do a survey and find out what would be the best time for it, you know, and that way, you know, you can get the maximize the most people there. So, I guess keep.
Here is the approach as far as parent educating parents of maybe a panel mm-hmm. of successful parents, so those parents mm-hmm. who have already produced fruitful teens,
yeah.
teens that are faithful to mm-hmm. the Lord, and have that panel answer questions. Mm-hmm. Or have you ever used that approach at all?
Okay, so the question was, have I ever used the approach of a successful panel of parents, you know, like a forum with for other parents? Right. I have not used that, but that's a great idea. And in youth ministry, stealing is still a commandment not to do that, but youth ministry, everyone steals yeah. from everybody. So yeah. thank you, Keith. I'm writing that down all to right. use that. That's a good idea. Yep.
How do you get them to go from being there to actually clicking and engaging? And here's an example.
Sure.
Like what we do every week is I'll ask the kids, if you tell me the main point of the sermon Sunday morning, mm-hmm. I'll give you a Coke.
Nice.
Very few yeah. of them actually can. And then, like, we've gone through the gospel multiple times, yeah. and I've told them, write down if you have questions, mm-hmm. and repeatedly I get, well, if somebody commits suicide, can mm-hmm. they still go to hell? If they're homosexual.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And we've kind of gone over and over, mm-hmm. and it's just not clicking.
Sure.
I don't know if that makes sense.
The question would be, you correct me here, how could you get the students to move to that next step, you know, other, like, knowing the pay attention, knowing the point of the sermon, or going beyond just the surface questions. Would that be okay?
Just, yeah,
in general. Yeah. I like to take students to camps, and I think for us, and again, you as a leader, you just have to be wise in the camp that you choose to take your students to, and because you're going to have speakers that come in, and you just have to be wise and be careful of that. We take our students to Big Stuff. It is, I believe it's run by North Point, or a subsidiary of North Point, or somebody's connected there. And you just have to, we take them there, and it's kind of like this, it is an emotional experience because it's the worship music that they like, and there is, you know, the messages are impactful. I just have to listen when I'm watching there, just what they're saying. That way I can meet with my group afterwards and say, hey, I say all that to say, I always try and start something right after that, because when they've gone to and they've seen that, they come back. Now they're ready. They're like, oh yeah, all right. And, or you had a retreat that maybe you ran yourself and you come back and they're excited and they're pumped up. And that's kind of the moment that I will seize that, for them. Another thing that I've done is they don't usually care how much I know until they know how much I care. And so I will spend time with them. Just fun stuff. Like this last lock-in we did, I didn't preach at it. I just said, we're having fun. That's the only purpose. We need to fellowship with one another. You students need to bring friends that I can meet, and then we can kind of build off of that. And so that's what I would say, like, have a slumber party at your house. And I'm sure they would love it, you know, and do each other's hair and nails. And yeah, I mean, it's those little things where eventually having that relationship that they will be comfortable enough to go deeper with you. And if not, you may be getting a call when they're in college because of that relationship. And they'll say, hey, I need this. So hopefully that helps. So, sure.
Yes. I was curious. You said that the children, the teenagers and stuff, will share a lot more when something is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
When they've had issues where they don't feel they can communicate with their parents, because communication between even two adults is really tricky sometimes.
Yeah.
Body language, tone mm-hmm. of voice,
mm-hmm.
personalities, it all just figures into it. Have you ever taken the things that you've gotten from these surveys or questions and then shared it with your parenting class?
Okay.
As far as how things come across.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the backward compliments and how they don't hear the compliment part of it. All they hear is the criticism. And
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering how beneficial that would be for a parent, because they're not going to hear it in the way they would need to from a child, because the child's not going
right.
to confront the parent. And the parent probably wouldn't hear it even if the child was able to.
Yeah, so the question, let's see if I can summarize this. The question is, have I ever taken what I learned in the survey that I did in the youth group about the things students struggle with, taking that and what have I done with that to communicate that to parents? Mostly what I've done with that is either on an individual basis with parents, or where I've said, hey, you got to be very careful, even when it is anonymous, because sometimes some parents will take it and they will run with it, or they will come down very hard on their student. And so there's like a delicate line as a youth pastor where you're always... You're almost dancing. I don't know if we can dance. This is one thing you can dance with. You're just kind of dancing with it, and you don't want to break that trust, because that student then, you know, they might somehow stuff sometimes gets back to them.
You can't be too specific.
You can't be too specific on it, but you can kind of give some alluding. And what I've done is I've said, hey, how is so and so, your daughter? And they'll say, and I'll say, yeah, you know, you might want to keep an eye on this, just so you're aware. And they'll say, they might follow it up and say, well, what do you mean? I'm like, I can't reveal too much because I have a confidentiality with this student. But, you know, I just wanted you to be aware of this. And, you know, best if you approach it, leave my name out of it. So that's one way. Another way is email. And it is kind of a limited way, because you hope parents will read the emails. But we send out weekly emails to parents and just letting them know what's going on, what's happening. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll talk about issues in students' lives, because many times students, they're not going to read their parents' email. They don't even know what email is. So send a text message. So parents will get that, and they'll go, oh, that's going on. Right? Oh, okay. And I'll try and use it as I'll call it teachable moments. And so I might provide a scenario, or I might just say, hey, here's what's happening. Be aware. That's a good question. They're all good questions.
Yeah. As far as knowing what really the gospel is,
mm-hmm.
I found that having role play,
yeah,
having to, like, win your friends for the Lord, and they're just buds, mm-hmm. buddies in youth group,
yeah.
But yet if you take turns in winning somebody, then they, oh, do this.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good. Yeah, role-playing, sharing the gospel is a great idea. Yes, sir.
I had the feeling that you're trying to, I'm not sure the term, mainstream, or there's an aspect of trying to mainstream the youth back into the adults.
Yeah.
About worship and mm-hmm. so forth, which is more of a trend. I hear a lot more mm-hmm. of that now.
Yes, sir.
We've gotten rid of that. We're mainstreaming our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to verify.
Yeah.
The other is how do you teach children and or kids, the youth, and older adults to appreciate diversity? Now, I'm not talking about mm-hmm. racial diversity. I mean
yeah.
age diversity. Mm-hmm. So I notice that our kids don't even look at adults older mm-hmm. than about 25 years old.
Yeah.
They won't even walk down the hall and not even notice them.
Mm-hmm.
There's this psychological thing called homophily where we clump. We like people like us.
Mm-hmm.
And you look across the fellowship hall, and the teens are clumped over here, and the old guys are clumped over mm-hmm. here talking about trucks or whatever.
yeah.
The lady, the young mother, right. are clumped over here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church is really designed to grow from diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how you start to sure. build that appreciation into kids so that
yeah.
man, I can learn something from Mrs. Smith. You know, mm-hmm. been a believer for 40 years.
Yeah.
Whatever, have four kids.
Yeah. Right. That's a good question.
The Bible gives you some opportunities for the mixing of the generations.
Yeah,
I was
some.
Yeah. Bible.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think the question was I trying to merge high school with the main service there with adults? Yes, that is a trend that's happening right now, and our church does that. Also, how do you... There's so much age diversity in churches. What, how can we, as a church, what are some ways that we can do that we can see more of that? And as we showed the video earlier at the beginning, the Backyard Bible Club, a lot of adults sometimes will volunteer. The adults volunteer to drive. They will host. And that's a great component just to get to know them, a lot of other ways that you can do, I think. We have a annual church Thanksgiving dinner, and it's one of my favorite things that we do. And just because, it is a potluck thing, but people eat, there's really opportunities that if you want to take that and do games where they have to actually interact with other people, that could be something that you can do. And I know sometimes that, we might look at stuff and go, well, it's not this or it's not that, but really it's what you make it. And I think personally that if me as a leader, the kids are going to follow what I do. They're going to follow my example. They're going to follow what I'm modeling. I think the same thing, as a pastor. Yep, Brian.
One of the things we work on in our church, it's a very difficult dynamic to be an intergenerational church. It's something we purposely set out to do. Georgetown, Texas has the oldest demographic in the greater Austin area. So amongst our 20 to 30 Hill Country churches, we're sitting there with Sun City, which is a retirement community, and other retirement communities there in Georgetown. We have a campus at Sun City, so we actually have two campuses. I preach at Sun City at 8:30, and I drive over and preach at 9:30, 11 o'clock service at our East Campus. But at our East Campus especially, we work hard to do the intergenerational thing. And, the things like you described, Dan, with regards to having the older adults cook for the younger, and then first they just are there serving, and then they start sharing their stories, and it's just amazing how when you just bring them together, that breaks some of that down. But we've had to be very intentional about mm-hmm. sacrifices on both sides of the equation. The hardest one was the sacrifice of worship. Josh here, as you saw him, you've heard him leading worship. He's a fabulous worship leader, and he's doing traditional songs here, but in a little bit of a contemporary style. And we do some of those. We do a mixture. But that was a sacrifice that the older generation had to make a little bit at our East Campus mm-hmm. for the younger generation to say, we're going to bring in contemporary songs and a full band, and it's going to be a little louder than you'd like, a little bit different songs than you may mm-hmm. like, but this is a sacrifice for the younger generation. We've got a guy who's 23. We've got a 23-year-old worship leader, but then also, Dan, how old are you? Go ahead.
I'm 39.
So we have a 39-year-old youth pastor, but we have a 23-year-old worship leader. We have two guys on staff that are in their 60s, or maybe three. Is Chuck up?
No, not yet. He's going to be mad when he hears this.
We're all on the map with regards to that. Yeah. And so we model it from a staff standpoint, and we model it from a programming standpoint, and it's very difficult. If you look at most churches, they become homogenous, sure. And there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to mm-hmm. do what you need to do to be intergenerational. But that's the church we see in the Bible, the older man teaching the younger man, the mm-hmm. older women training the younger women, and we work hard at that. And as a result, at least in our East Campus, obviously our Sun City campus is made up primarily of Sun City folks. We have about 100 or so there. We just launched that a few years ago that are all Sun mm-hmm. City, so they're retirement age. But over at the East Campus, we have pretty much an equal mix if you look across the board.
Yeah.
Kids, youth, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up to 90 years old mm-hmm. in that campus. So.
Let me see if I can summarize that real quick for those listening. Pastor Brian was just saying how we have a mixture. You have to be very intentional in mixing your age-diverse crowd. And he was just giving some stuff.
That's not to say we don't do things individually. Yeah. By the way, junior highs still have Sunday school.
We cut off
point at ninth grade. He didn't clarify that. But in ninth grade, we say, now you're an adult. And so you're going to do exactly what all of our adults are doing, which means you're going to serve, you're going to be a part. And they've actually found there are two things that cause the 20-somethings to leave the church, and about 85 to 90% of 20-somethings leave the church now, evangelical churches. And two reasons. One, getting blown up in college because they weren't prepared for the answers and their faith gets rocked. And the second was just the fact that they didn't feel like they owned the church. Church was someplace I came to as a program for me. And they said, actually, the number one way to keep 20-year-olds, 20-somethings, in church is to have them own the church when they're younger. I am the church. I am a part of the church. This is me. I'm supposed to be a part of the church, not come and I get something, a program from the church. But when we program, we just spoon-feed kids, and they're not really serving. And then they go through college, and they have the same kind of experience. Then they get out, and they're not sure what to do. Mm-hmm. So that's why we made that. And again, that was not without a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to make that switch.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to recap there, Pastor Brian was just mentioning how our junior high still has Sunday school, but we made the change just because we want students to own it, own the church, serve alongside them. And yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, his example of using music that was fixated towards the older generation, I'm sure it was intentional, but I'm a high school teacher, I'm a youth pastor, but I think that we also have to instruct mm-hmm. Not laying it on the kids, because mm-hmm. they're kids, but laying it on the adults, you have to intentionally interact.
Yeah.
And be okay with Instagram and Facebook and mm-hmm. Facebook anymore, but Twitter or whatever. You have to educate yourself what's important to the youth.
Yeah.
Because I'm uncomfortable with that. I try mm-hmm. to do it, but if I'm not Twittering or Instagramming, I'm out of touch with what my own kids are doing and what mm-hmm. the generation is into. So
yeah.
We have to keep our pulse.
That's a good point. We have to keep, not just the students, it's the adults really have to keep up with what's going on and what's happening. And it is always changing, and that's the thing that it seems like, when will it ever end? And maybe that's the wrong question to ask. Maybe the question to ask is, what can I do? So thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thanks.